Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoeffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Andrea and Ron DeFeo, Dr. Robert Peskin, and Dr. Raymond Ellis.
The Federal Highway Administration and the Road Safety Foundation sponsor the biennial National Road Safety Award competition to recognize road safety achievements that help reduce fatalities and serious injuries on the nation's roadways. In 2017, the Delaware Department of Transportation was among the winners in the category of infrastructure and operational improvements for a high-friction road surface treatment that reduced the number of road departure crashes, particularly in wet and slippery weather. That treatment is just one of the improvements included in Delaware DOT's Highway Safety Plan. Here to tell us about this surface treatment and the DelDOT Safety Plan is Mark Lutz, who's the Chief Traffic Engineer for the Delaware Department of Transportation. Mark, I'm really happy to talk to you today.
Great. Thanks, Joe. I'm happy to be here.
First, tell us something about the subject of this award, this high-friction surface treatment. Just what is that treatment?
So I'm a traffic engineer, so I'm not a pavement expert, but high-friction surface treatment is an ultra-thin pavement overlay. It uses an epoxy resin or a polymer binder and high-quality polish-resistant aggregate. The moral of all of that, which again doesn't really mean a lot to me as a traffic engineer, is that the friction between the vehicle's tires and the roadway is greater than on a normal hot mix or asphalt or concrete surface. And so therefore, particularly in wet weather and icy weather, you'll have a greater friction between the vehicle and the pavement and less possibility of vehicles falling off the road, which usually don't have good consequences when that happens.
Have you been applying this in many places or a few targeted places?
We've done it at about 30 locations throughout the state, mostly two-lane roadways, one lane in each direction, mostly rural and mostly curves, not exclusively. We have done one very high volume ramp from a major arterial onto I-95, an interstate roadway, and we've done one location that was a stop-controlled intersection, so we were getting a lot of rear-end crashes due to wet weather and sliding, but most of the locations have been on two-lane rural curves.
Are you deploying this proactively or responding to accident experience?
Mostly responding to accident experience. The way we prioritized our locations is we looked at statewide crashes and we looked at all of the wet weather type of crashes and developed a ranking system based on the rate of wet weather crashes, basically crashes per average annual daily traffic volume. And then there was a bunch of other criteria involved. We were looking at 0.3-mile segments, but then there was a rolling segments as you go down the roadway. So it was based on crash experience. And then when we ranked the list, we went down each one individually, and some locations were excluded for various reasons, such as we have an active project in the area, or we had just made changes in the recent past. Other than high friction surface treatment, we might have done signing changes or striping changes or other things like that. So we would have excluded some sites. If the location was coming up to be paved within the next year, we would have excluded it. We don't want to put this material down and then just have it paved over that quickly. So basically, that's how we had a site selection process, but the key information was the crash data to start off.
The way you're describing it, sounds like if you're going to do some kind of resurfacing or rehabilitation, then you can include this high friction treatment in appropriate locations when you do that project.
Yes, we can do that. With the first round that we did starting a few years ago, as our first round of doing this, we wanted to try to stay out of other projects and just keep this as an independent effort. Now, moving ahead, we are looking at exactly that. There's a particular location I'm thinking of where we want to convert a roadway from a two-way stop to an all-way stop, but we have concerns about the roadway that currently doesn't have to stop when they're going to have to stop in the future when we make it an all-way stop condition. We had concerns about the grades, so we are combining that effort with a paving project that's coming up to get the high-friction surface treatment installed. And of course, now that we have this out in the field, first of all, monitoring closely what the crash trends are. We're monitoring the condition of the high-friction surface treatment to see how it's wearing over time, particularly in a state like Delaware where we get snow and we plow the road and we plow right down to the pavement. We're keeping a close eye on the condition of the high friction surface treatment. As time goes on, these roads are going to be paved, and so generally the material will be milled and overlaid like all the rest of the roads, and then we will look to reinstall the high friction surface treatment back on the new pavement.
Did it work? Did you get good results in terms of the crash experience?
Yes. So we've gotten very good results. We have 56% reduction in road departure crashes on the locations that we installed this material. So it's been very effective. We're very happy with the crash reduction results. When we're looking at crash reduction factors for various tools that we look at in highway safety engineering, often we're looking at getting a 5 or a 10 or a 15% reduction in crashes. So to get a 56% reduction in road departure crashes is a very good result. Obviously, we'd like more. We want 100% reduction in crashes, but 56% reduction we're very happy with. Now, as I was telling you earlier, we are keeping a close eye on how this material is wearing over time. Some of the locations we've installed the high friction surface treatment, we are getting some raveling of the material. So we're keeping a close eye on that. We're working very close with our pavement management experts. Again, I'm a traffic engineer. I'm a traffic safety engineer. I'm not a pavement expert, but we have pavement experts, and we're working closely with them to try to figure out where we're having some raveling. Why is that happening? Was it not installed properly? Is there an issue with the binder or what the issue may have been? And from that information, we may modify the specification to improve the wearing over time. Even nationwide, not just in Delaware, but nationwide, the whole high friction surface treatment is a relatively new process. So not just us in Delaware, but really others around the country are kind of learning their way through this as we apply it in the field. We may find that on certain types of roads, we may or may not want to install this in the future. I know what we've mostly installed so far is curves on two-lane rural roadways, but we're kind of excited to try this on some other types of locations, such as at signalized intersections, where we often have high rates of rear-end crashes.
Sounds like you're doing your own before and after studies to evaluate the effectiveness of this treatment.
Yes, we're definitely keeping a very close eye on the crash data, updating it on a fairly regular basis. And really, that's not something just for the high friction surface treatment we're doing. Compared to at least our agency did in the past, we're looking at a lot of before and after crash data on a wide variety of treatments that we are installing in the field, whether it's something as old and boring as a traffic signal, up to any of the new things that we might be doing, like a pedestrian hybrid beacon or new types of striping or various type of pedestrian treatments. A lot of the things we're doing, we're trying to keep a very close eye on the crash data and compare before and after and do the statistical tests to try to get a better handle on what works, what doesn't work, and where.
It seems that that learning is really very important. Do you share that? Does that go into the research literature or the professional literature so that your colleagues in other states can know what your experience has been?
Some of it does, but most of it doesn't. That's actually a very good question that some of us have been talking about at some of the national conferences that we have. And nationally, we need to find a better way to collect and disseminate, I call mini studies, where it's good information, but it's not typically the kind of thing that would get published, certainly not published by the level of scrutiny that things would be given towards Transportation Research Board publication, where there's a very high level of peer review. And again, often that's something that's coming through the universities. And on the good side of that, the academic side, they know what they're doing. They know how to do their research. They know the statistical tests. There's a whole process there. But there's a lot of stuff that a lot of us are doing that is more simple, and it might even be considered a naive statistical analysis, but it's still good information, and it's not necessarily published to the world. In the short term, we try to put as much as possible on our website so that it's out there, but nobody would really know that it's there unless they came looking for it necessarily. So that's a very good question, and I think several of us are trying to look at from a national level to try to do a better job at.
Yeah, something really to think about, because there's a lot of what you might call softer statistical outcomes, but when that starts to pile up, it's all going in the same direction, then there's a finding in that that has value for people.
Yes, I agree.
Let me take you on for a few moments to your strategic highway safety plan. What are the key elements in that?
Our strategic highway safety plan was last adopted in 2015, and we plan to do an update in 2020. It's a federally required program. It gives us general guidance and a framework, but it gives each state a lot of leeway in melding towards our particular issues in each state. So Delaware's long-term goal, with strategic highway safety plan, is to eliminate fatalities and serious injuries. So that's a very ambitious goal. We may never get there, but the goal is to get to zero. And in fact, we've adopted what a lot of other states and agencies have adopted is our motto is towards zero deaths. And in the short term, we're certainly trying to drive down fatalities and serious injuries. That's the focus of what we're doing with that overall program. So we look at statewide all the different types of crashes, and we look at a whole bunch of different types of crashes, and we have a multidisciplinary team. The main players in Delaware are DelDOT, that's my agency, the Department of Transportation, our Office of Highway Safety, and the Delaware State Police. So that's the core team, but then we have a much broader team, including our metropolitan planning organizations and some of our cities and some of our counties and EMS professionals and others, and that whole team develops this plan. In Delaware, we have 8 emphasis areas based on the data, which again is looking at the serious injuries and the fatalities. And really 3 of those emphasis areas, well, one of them is data. So one of our emphasis areas is data, because if you don't have good data, really nothing else matters. Improving our crash reporting systems and our abilities to query and our abilities to parse out the crash data and map it and all those kind of things, that's one of our emphasis areas that really supports the whole program. But of the 7 data-driven emphasis areas, really 3 of them primarily fall under DelDOT's responsibility, and those would be intersections, roadway departure, and pedestrians. The high-friction surface treatment is primarily one of our tools in reducing the roadway departure crashes.
What are you doing in particular about making walking and street crossing safer?
Sure. Pedestrian crashes in Delaware are definitely a big concern. Pedestrians have been part of our strategic highway safety plan since our first one was adopted in the mid-2000s. And most times when you see national rankings of pedestrian crashes, Delaware's usually ranked in the top 5 in the country of worst states when the metric is pedestrian fatalities per population. So it's definitely a big issue for us. We spend a lot of effort on it. There's a variety of things that we're doing to try to improve pedestrian safety in Delaware. One of the main things we do is, and we've been doing this for about 9 or 10 years now, are studies called pedestrian safety audits, where we decide on reviewing a corridor based on a review of pedestrian crash data throughout the state. And in Delaware, our biggest issue is on suburban, multi-lane, high-speed corridors, where the pedestrian volumes aren't necessarily that high. Our biggest pedestrian crash problem is not in an urban core or a downtown area or a college town where you have hundreds and hundreds of pedestrians. In our situation, at least, those locations, not that you don't have crashes and you don't have fatalities, but that's not where our biggest problem is. Again, our biggest problem is on the multi-lane, high-speed suburban corridors. The pedestrian safety audits will pick a corridor based on, again, the crash trends and numbers, and then we'll develop a multidisciplinary team. We'll bring folks from our engineering groups, our pedestrian advocates, state police, various safety experts. We'll review the corridor. We'll usually walk through the corridor. We'll look at the crash data. We'll look at the pedestrian generators in the corridor. We'll do counts. We'll do all the things that traffic engineers always do. We'll do traffic counts. We'll do pedestrian counts. We'll do our analysis and things like that. And then we try to come up with short and long-term recommendations to improve the safety on those corridors. So the types of recommendations and things that ultimately we're implementing are things from the very traditional crosswalks at traffic signals and making sure that the crosswalks are available at the traffic signals and that you have the proper pedestrian signal there with the countdown head and the proper button placement and all the things that go with that, which even that, and I don't know nationally what other agencies are doing, but even as recently as 10 years ago in Delaware, we might have had a philosophy to say, we don't really want pedestrians on this high-speed roadway, so we're not going to put in crosswalks or pedestrian signals. And we've really flipped that completely. Probably it was about 10 years ago that we said, look, there are pedestrians here, whether we think they should be here or not. There are pedestrians here, and we need to give them a good chance to get across the street safely. I never want to say a safe crossing, because anytime any pedestrian's crossing a street, there's an element of risk there. The driver could be running the red light, the pedestrian could not be paying attention, or any other thing that could go wrong. But years ago, we decided if we have a traffic signal and there's any kind of pedestrian activity in the area, we're going to eventually put in a crosswalk and the curb ramps and the pedestrian signals and push buttons that all go along with that. But then some of the other things we would be looking at is, or potentially new traffic signals, we would be looking at pedestrian hybrid beacons. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but that's kind of a new kind of a traffic signal that stops traffic while the pedestrian is crossing, but then goes into a flashing red mode that would let motor vehicles proceed as long as a pedestrian's not in the crosswalk. We are implementing a lot of rectangular rapid flashing beacons. We started that program a few years ago. That was a type of beacon that's more on a stutter flash than the traditional steady flash pattern that was first rolled out in Florida, and it's proven very successful across the country. You get very high driver yielding rates when you install these rectangular rapid flash beacons.
Sounds like you're doing a lot in the pedestrian area, kind of a change in philosophy over the years, maybe connected with complete streets philosophy that people are using in roadway planning. What's particularly interesting, and you've shared with us, it's been really important, is the extent to which you're making data-driven decisions, collecting your own data, doing your own analysis, and using that to guide investment choices and designs. For that, I really appreciate your spending the time with us to introduce us to what you're doing. Your award sounds like it's well-deserved, and you've told us something that's important about the need to share learning with each other as we advance this field. Mark, thanks very much for spending the time with us.
Great. Thanks a lot, Joe. Appreciate it. I'm happy to talk to you.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please encourage your friends to subscribe to our podcast. The Infrastructure Show is recorded in the Reeves Audio Recording Studios in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Jim Reeves, chief engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.